You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
All right, Cooley's in today. Tommy will be in tomorrow. Tommy's actually getting that second of the vaccine shots. So he completes his vaccine cycle today. Good for him. Hopefully it all goes well, and he'll be with us tomorrow to tell us about it. So Cooley is with me today. I did not do a podcast yesterday. I will try to make up yesterday's podcast on Saturday with another sort of interview show. I do want to...
Hold on. Have you had the vaccine?
I have not.
Are you eligible for the vaccine at this point?
I am not. Are you?
No, if you're not, I'm not.
Well, I mean, you know, you could have some sort of underlying condition. No, I'm not. I'm not in any of the 1A, 1B, 1C categories. Now, my wife said that a lot of people are showing up at places like CVS or Giant's Pharmacy at the end of the day because they don't waste any vaccines. So if people don't show up for their appointments, they end up giving, you know, shots to people who are there. I haven't done that. Maybe I'll do it. I don't know.
You won't.
It's not, as you know, been something that's really worked me up over the last year, and it hasn't you either. With that said, like I've said all along, I don't want to get it. I certainly don't want to get it. And the more you're reading about it, the potential long-term effects, even if in the short term, you know, your symptoms are relatively benign, you know, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, it's starting to come out. I do want to get vaccinated. Have I been aggressive in trying to figure out how to get vaccinated? I have not. I am waiting my turn, I guess. I would rather, you know, not that I'm so selfless, but I would rather, you know, older people and people who are much more vulnerable get it. Like, my mother just got it. My father just got it, thankfully. My father was another one of those people. He's like, whatever. You know, he's the one that said very early on, he said to me, look, if this thing's out there because basically it's a population thinning event and it's coming for me, so be it. But I'm not going to stop playing golf and I'm not going to stop living my life. And he hasn't. You know, he pretty much over the last year has done what he's wanted to do. Now, I'm not at the expense of being safe. You know, he wears a mask and he socially distances, but he's not been one of those older people that has basically locked themselves in their house for a year either. My mother has, but my mother also is more vulnerable because of, you know, she's a cancer, you know, a survivor. And so, you know, she should be much more.
But she's locked herself in the house with your father.
With her husband. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Sorry.
They've been,
They're
much more concerned, and they've been much more diligent in sort of their approach to not exposing themselves. Where, you know, my father, who's been down in Florida with his wife, they play golf, they go out to restaurants, they go out to dinner, and he just got the first part of the vaccine like 2 weeks ago. So anyway,
I met a guy couple weeks ago in Laurel, Montana, who had gotten it a long time ago, 6 months ago at least, my age.
How?
He still has no taste.
Well, you know, Scott got it. Scott still does not have all taste and smell back.
This dude said it's been almost 6 months. He tastes nothing.
Well, for Scott, it's been two months, every bit of 2 months, and he does not have full taste or full smell back. Those were the only symptoms he had. He didn't have any other symptoms. And as he says, every time, you know, I talk to him, I'm like, do you have it back yet? And he goes, not really. And he always says, well, you know, if you gave me the choice of getting really sick or having this, I'd take this, obviously. But there are a lot of people that go months and months and months without, you know, taste and smell.
That would be awful, but for a while it would be probably good for someone like you or I, who always complain like, I'm getting fat. If I can't taste anything, I'm probably not going to eat anything.
He kept eating. And then he found some things that he, you know, like lemon is something that he can taste. And there are a couple of other things, like there's like certain aromas that he can smell. But for the most part, he has not gotten back his full taste or smell.
Crazy.
Crazy. I know. You know, and then you start reading about all these other variants and, you know, I mean, it's concerning. It is. I've told you this before, but I have seasonal asthma, and it's the spring when the tree pollen gets really bad. I don't just sneeze and, you know, get itchy eyes. I actually have an asthmatic response to that. I've had that since I was a kid, but it's seasonal. I don't have any issues other than the 2 weeks in the spring when the tree pollen's really bad. But I think, based even on that, I think I actually might qualify now as, you know, having, even if it's seasonal asthma, somebody that might be able to step to the front of the line, not in front of all the old people and healthcare workers and all of the frontline people that were vaccinated. I was reading something yesterday, actually, about the different states that have handled it well. And apparently the state of West Virginia has handled it exceptionally well with the vaccine. And the governor of that state, whose name escapes me right now, I'm looking it up right now because that's, Jim Justice. He's a Republican from West Virginia. In this story that I was reading, he said it was really simple. We just had this motto, age, age, age. That was it. We were vaccinating all of the frontline workers, and then it was all about every single old person, and we didn't make them sign up over the internet. We gave them phone numbers to call. Duh. A lot of old people have had issues with internet signups, you know, and getting online, you know, every day to see, you know, they want to, a lot of people who are 85 years old want a phone number. Like, he basically said there's just a lot of common sense in our approach. We were going to make sure all of the frontline health workers got vaccinated, and then it was age, 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 and we were going to make it very easy for people, for old people, to figure out how to get vaccinated. Duh. Because I know in some of these states, it's like it's only online, you know, sign up. And then you're like, well, you need to get everybody over the age of 80. And a lot of those people, they're not, you know, even in 2021, it's not like they're sitting there on social media all day or on TikTok all day. You know, internet right. access isn't like a given for them.
Find my news on TikTok.
Yeah, I don't know. Is Jim Justice, is he a new governor? Since 2017, he's been the governor of West Virginia. But apparently West Virginia's vaccination rating ranks among the highest in the world and the highest in this country in terms of getting it out effectively. You know, I don't know. I'm not going to get into my sort of the whole bureaucracy and government workers and these people are dedicated, don't get me wrong, but sometimes I think there's just a lot of common sense missing from a lot of people in government. Like, you know, we got to get this done. I know your hours are 9 to 5 and I know you've got 17 floating holidays and you get 2 hour lunches, but this is a priority right now. We're going to stay a little bit late today and we're going to get some vaccines into some people's arms.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do that. That sounds, good idea, Kevin.
I say that, and I know that it's not totally true, and Tommy always picks me apart on that. It's just that my background was early stage entrepreneurial companies before I got into broadcasting. And there weren't hours. There weren't holidays. Of course you took holidays off. It was whatever it takes to get the job. It's not like you have a client, they need the product by, you know, Friday. It's not like, oh, well, it's Friday, we don't have it to them, we'll get it to you on Monday. No, it's like we're staying there until however late it takes on Friday night and Saturday and Sunday to get it done and get it to them. I just think it's a different sort of mindset in those environments, in those work environments. And by the way, maybe the other one is healthier. Maybe the predictability of a 9-to-5 day and scheduled vacations and scheduled holidays, maybe that's healthier. It probably is. Whatever. How did we get out onto this?
I don't know. Oh. I have a couple other questions for you before.
Okay. I do want to get to Alex Smith, which I did not have a chance to weigh in.
I know you do, but
on the podcast yesterday, and you as well. But go ahead.
I wanted to ask you about a couple things. So I signed up with your promo code, KevinDC at MyBookie.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about a couple games I wanted to ask you about today.
Okay. I haven't looked at the board, but go ahead.
I'm thinking about taking St. Francis at Merrimack. St. Francis is 8-9. Uh-huh. Merrimack's 8-6. Uh-huh. God, Merrimack is only favored by 3 points here. I'm thinking about putting a nickel on this game.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the gym yet? Have they pulled the stands down, or are they going to leave the stands up?
I didn't look too close at Merrimack's gym, but I don't know. St. Francis seems like the right side here.
It does, really.
Take a look at that.
What else?
I really like Tennessee Martin at SIU Edwardsville.
That's a good league.
In the Ohio Valley Conference.
Yeah, the Ohio Valley, sometimes Murray State and all these teams, it's sometimes a pretty good league to bet.
The question is, Tennessee Martin is getting 4.5.
Yeah.
Should I buy the half point there and go to 5?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're 4.5 and you got to pay -1, on my bookie, sometimes you will get much less than a -120 on a half point purchase. But yeah, definitely. I haven't looked at the board yet today. I did have a good night last night.
And then the last game, I really like Arkansas Pine Bluff as a puppy there against Texas Southern.
You know, just so you know, and I know you're mocking me right now.
I'm not mocking you. I'm actually going to play these games.
But I just want you to know, and for all of you out there, your odds of winning a game involving tonight, let's just say Michigan-Iowa, that's the big game tonight, huge game tonight, national implications tonight. Your chances of winning or losing the Michigan-Iowa game are no different than the Merrimack-St. Francis game. Like, there is, it's not like betting Merrimack against St. Francis. Why would you do that? I mean, you can't win that game. It's the exact same chances. The point spread, trust me, on the Merrimack St. Francis game has been well thought out, and it's the right point spread. And it's they've created basically the same chance for you to win or lose that game as they have for Michigan and Iowa. With that said, though, Cooley.
No, they're not coming live to you from Hamel Court.
Is Hamel Court like a CYO gym? Probably. You know, speaking of that, and this podcast today is brought to you, thank you, Cooley, brought to you by MyBookie at MyBookie.ag. Get yourself ready for March Madness right now. Sign up. They're going to match your deposit halfway up to $1,000 if you use my promo code KevinDC. All of the college basketball games here over the final 2.5 weeks leading into what will first be the conference tournaments, and then we are 2 weeks away now from the conference tournaments. We are 3 weeks away today from that first, round of 32 in the round of 64, 32 games a day, Thursday, 16 games a day, Thursday and Friday. We are exactly 3 weeks away from that. I was talking about it this morning. I'm really into college hoops. I think it's actually a really good season, and I think it's going to be a great tournament. I just knock on wood that you don't have COVID cancellations or forfeitures or, postponements or delays. Hopefully not. They're going to play the whole tournament in the state of Indiana, sort of a bubble. But mybookie.ag, as I've mentioned before, you're going to get quality, fair lines, fair pricing, and you're going to get paid if you win. And they're going to give you free money to sign up. So use my promo code KevinDC at mybookie.ag. I did have Cooley a good night last night. Now, It was one of those nights where it was great because there was a game that I liked really early, but I just didn't know that it started that early. I really liked Wake Forest getting 3 against Clemson. It was Wake's first game back. They were catching a short number. It seemed wrong. and I didn't play the game because it started at 4 p.m. and I thought it started at 6. And so terrible clock management. And this is when, you know, you don't get a bet down on a game that you really like. Then you're rooting for it to lose. And it did. Badly. Wake Forest only scored 39 points and they got beat 60-39. But that's like a win, right? Because I wanted to bet but I didn't bet it and it lost. So it's almost like a win. And then there were several games last. Tim Murray and I, for all of you who don't know this, Tim is working with Aaron Oster, the producer here, is working for. VSiN, you know, the Brent Musburger Gambling Network out in Las Vegas. Tim's hosting a show that Aaron's producing at nighttime, West Coast time. I think it runs 10 to 1 Eastern, so it's 7 to 10 Vegas time. Murray and I are texting back constantly, back and forth, because he's betting a ton of college hoops. And yesterday, the two of us were just on the same page. He immediately sent me early in the day. He goes, I like Rutgers a lot, and I love Arkansas. And I said, yep. I go, I really like Temple. And I said I liked Wake Forest. I said I like Temple. I like St. Joe's. And I really like your Rutgers as well. And I like Cincinnati. I also liked Miami of Florida. And Miami of Florida, Cooley, was getting 12.5 against Florida State. They were my one loser last night. Wake would have been the other. But because I didn't bet it, it pretty much turned into a winner. Miami of Florida was catching 12 against Florida State, and no one was on Miami last night, nor should they have been, really, except for me. Florida State's really good, and Florida State's, you know, Florida State's been on a bit of a roll. They're ranked high. Miami got absolutely run out of the gym on Saturday by Georgia Tech. At one point, I think the score was 52-19. On Saturday. So, you know, here's Miami coming in off this terrible loss to Georgia Tech. I think they ended up losing the game by 30. And Florida State sort of rolling. And, you know, they were laying a number that the public perceived as short. Florida State had blown out Virginia over the weekend by 21. By the way, I want to mention them here in a moment. So I took Miami. It was never close. I mean, they were down 25-8 to start the game. It was never close. And we have decided, those of us that liked Miami last night, we are putting them now on what we refer to as the not playlist. You're not allowed to play them, no matter how right they look. They're on the not playlist.
Well, if they're on the not playlist, could they be on the always bet against them list?
No, you can't do that either, because like they play Clemson next. And Clemson, like if Clemson's only like a 6-point favorite and all the public's on Clemson, you know, Miami's going to look right and they might get it done. But when in the previous two games, when you get beat as badly as they've been beaten in the last two games, when they've looked like the right contrarian side, we just throw them on the not playlist anymore. That's where they make it. Not when I say not playlist, you can't play them or you can't play against them either. So that's sort of
I got that.
The Miami Hurricanes and old Jim Larrañaga, they have been eliminated from my playlist. I will not play a game involving them. But Arkansas won last night. But by the way, UVA lost again last night. UVA has a really interesting season going because they're perceived to be a top four seed in a region, like one of the top 16 teams in the country. They have now lost three games in a row. They got blown out by Florida State. They lost a really good game against Duke the other night. They lost at home last night to NC State, who's really not that good, even though they've been playing better. Virginia does not have one decent win all season long. They don't have one good win. They played Gonzaga in December and lost by like 25. You know, somebody might say, oh, well, they beat Clemson when Clemson was ranked. They did, and they beat them by 35. But Clemson also then lost like two games later by 35. Wins over North Carolina, you know, North Carolina got blown out last night by Marquette. And Marquette's not going to the tournament. I love Virginia's team. I love watching them play. I think they're so well coached. I think they're going to be in the tournament. I don't understand how anybody looks at their profile and thinks it's that much better than Maryland's. Maryland's schedule, brutal, and Maryland has five wins that are much higher quality than any of Virginia's wins. Now, Maryland, the metrics and the analytics are treating them very well. Like in KenPom right now, I'm looking at it, they're 28 in the country with 10 losses. That tells you how, you know, good the analytics are treating them. Like, there's not one team that's ranked in front of them in KenPom with anywhere near the number of losses. I guess that's not true. Rutgers has 9 losses. Then everybody else is basically from 0 to 6 losses. Maryland has 10 losses. There are so many teams below them that have 5, 6, 7, 8 losses. The analytics are treating them really well. But Virginia still somehow is 14. I don't get that. They haven't beaten anybody.
I've watched some of the last couple of Virginia games.
Why?
Because my internet's really slow and I have DirecTV, and so I don't watch Netflix between 6 and 10 o'clock in the evening. So I find myself watching sports.
What?
Uh-huh. What? Do you want to get deeper into this, or you want to talk about Virginia?
Well, I don't. Why? The internet's slow because more people are on it?
I have satellite internet, which is from HughesNet. Uh-huh. HughesNet will never be a sponsor of this podcast.
Uh-huh.
It's busy.
Why don't you just get normal cable? What about DirecTV?
I have DirecTV. I don't have DirecTV internet. There is not cable internet. I live rural in a rural area.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard that there are people lobbying in Wyoming to get rural internet as the cable run to rural or better internet to rural areas, because if you want to entice people to move to Wyoming, a lot of them, especially if they're going to move to Wyoming and work and do Zoom things, they're going to need internet. You ain't doing Zoom at my house. And here's the craziest thing about HughesNet is you get a certain amount of gigabytes, and then when it uses them up, it's like – you have unlimited internet, except it goes slow after you use up X amount of gigabytes. Well, when you're watching Netflix, you're like, hey, did someone leave Netflix on? Got to make sure you turn it off before you go to bed.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you what,
seriously.
About
20 days into the month, we're in slow-mo.
I don't know what I'd do without Netflix.
Well, you can still watch Netflix. It just buffers a lot between 6 and 10 o'clock.
Well, then you can't watch it.
No. I mean, it's the worst.
Out here in Powell, Wyoming, we got to let it buffer a little bit. So it takes us about 4 hours to watch a half-hour show.
So I find myself watching a little more regular television.
So,
still DVR it.
So what do you think about Virginia?
They don't score late into the possessions.
Well, yeah.
What I was thinking about Virginia is if they don't score initially and early, their offense just isn't good enough. Now, Tony Bennett usually is a guy that moves the ball really well. They play a half-court offense. They always play it slow.
Yeah.
Play great defense. I mean, everyone's watched Virginia over the last few years.
Right.
He's an innovator on defense, and they're a half-court offensive team, which is fun to watch because that's the basketball that I grew up watching, college basketball. It was Stu Morrill at Utah State. 5 passes before anyone shoots.
Yeah.
And they were good. They were good. They were consistent. They got open shots. They got open looks. Virginia doesn't. They don't get shots late. And they can't score late when they need it. They're going to struggle if they can't find ways to score later in possessions, because that's the style they're trying to play.
He was a good coach, right? Utah State had some really good college teams. Maryland played them in the tournament 1 year in the first round. They beat them.
2005.
What'd you say?
I think it was 2005.
No, it wasn't. It was the late 90s. They may have played them again.
No, it was definitely after that. It was when I was in the NFL.
Utah State played Maryland in the tournament when you were in the NFL?
Yes.
I know they played them in the late 90s. I'm looking it up right now. You think that they played Maryland in 2005? Utah State NCAA tournament history. I don't think that's true, to be honest with you.
Okay. No, I don't want to subscribe to the thing that I'm trying to look at. I know they played Maryland. Let's take a look at that.
I hold on. It's weird the way this works because I looked it up by Utah State and they just have how far they go, but they don't have the teams they play. You almost have to go to like the coaches. So I'll go to Gary Williams because he would have been the coach in 2005, and it, on the, his thing. So
yeah, 98 they lost to Maryland.
Yeah, the 98 year was Maryland's loss to St. John's in the Sweet 16. Unfortunately, it was terrible. They were favored.
That's crazy. They lost to Arizona in 2005. Why did I think they lost to Maryland?
And Maryland,
maybe because I was
Maryland beat Utah Maryland. State in the first round, beat Illinois, beat Arizona. All right, 98 was Arizona, 99 was St. John's. And you're saying 2005?
They did not play Maryland again in the tournament.
Yeah,
how I mixed that up, I'm not sure.
I didn't think they did. I mean, I think if you tested me right now, I could probably name every single Maryland opponent in the NCAA tournament under Gary Williams. And that's a lot of tournament games, man. He coached in a lot of tournament games. They went to the tournament 12 straight years, went to 7 Sweet 16s. So that's a lot of tournament games. But I remember the Utah State game from that year. I just didn't think that they had played him again. Actually, I don't think I could name every team. I'll tell you. There's
no way you could name every team.
Well, I can tell you this. Gary Williams started, you know, with the team that was on probation. The first year they went to the tournament was the 1994, spring of 94. They beat St. Louis. And, God, that was an unbelievable day at T-Bones in Bethesda. Carl McCarty, Gary Williams, Jimmy Patsos, all of the owners of T-Bones in Bethesda, great neighborhood bar back in the 90s and the early 2000s. That place was packed on that Friday afternoon. Actually, it was a Thursday afternoon for that game. And Maryland, it was Maryland's first game back in the tournament after coming off probation. They beat St. Louis. They beat UMass as a 10 seed. UMass was the 2 seed. In the second round to go to the Sweet 16, and they lost to Michigan. The next year, with Joe Smith and Keith Booth year two, I want to say they beat Gonzaga, Texas. Do you have this?
And then lost to
UConn in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, by the way, there were several players sick. Maryland was favored in that game. They were ranked, I think they were a 3 seed or a 2 seed in that region that year. And then Gary had his back-to-back, only time ever, back-to-back first-round losses. The first one was to the College of Charleston.
No.
The first one was to Santa Clara?
Yes.
That was Steve Nash. Steve Nash, they lost to in 96 in the first round, and Gary tells such a great story. He's like, they had watched the tape. They knew how good Nash was. And then they got to the game and they watched this dude with basically, you know, socks falling off his calves and ankles. And the players are watching him warming up and they're like, yeah, right. And Nash torched him, knocked him out. And then the next year was College of Charleston, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So then we go to 98.
You can do it. I love it.
Utah State. Illinois, Arizona.
Yeah.
They lost to Arizona in the Sweet 16. Arizona went on to win the national championship that year. The next year was the Steve Francis year. They were 2 seed. A lot of people had them winning the national championship or getting to the Final Four. This was the most disappointing exits in the Sweet 16. They lost to St. John's in the Sweet 16. That was the Ron Artest St. John's team. They, in the first round. All right, hold on. The second round was Creighton.
Mm-hmm.
The first round,
they beat a 15 seed.
Yeah, they were 2 seed. Was it Valpo? Was it Valparaiso?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. All right, good. All right. Then, so back-to-back Sweet 16 losses. The second one in 99 with Steve Francis was disappointing. The next year, they beat Iona. Am I mm-hmm. right? And then they got absolutely blown out by Earl Watson and UCLA. Maryland was favored in that game over UCLA. And I'm telling you, if you've got the score up, I'm going to say it was like 105-72 or something like that.
Very close, 105-70.
How about that? It was a mismatch from the beginning. And that was the disappointing exit because it was a good team. But then the next year was their Final Four team. So It started with a win and a close win over George Mason. All right. They started with the two Georges, George Mason and then Georgia State. Lefty was coaching Georgia State. Then they beat Georgetown in the Sweet 16. And then probably the most emotional win, because it was their first win to go to a Final Four, for me anyway, they beat Stanford, Casey Jacobson in Stanford. I've told that story many times. Juan Dixon at the first timeout, the under-16 timeout, Casey Jacobson was a star. You could hear him. People that were at that game heard him audibly say to Gary as he was walking off the floor after the first TV timeout, "Dude can't play." Like, what does that mean? He stinks. He can't play. Maryland torched Stanford and then lost to Duke, blowing a 22-point lead in the Final Four game at Minneapolis, the officiating impacting that game. And then 2002 was the national championship year. That is easy. It was Siena. It was Wisconsin. Those two games, by the way, were at the MCI Center, Capital One Arena. It was packed to the rafters, all Maryland fans. They blew Wisconsin out. And then it was Kentucky, UConn, Kansas, Indiana. Then in 2000, you know, they won the national championship. 2003 was the famous Drew Nicholas buzzer beater against UNC Wilmington in the first round. Then in the second round, they beat Xavier yep. in the second round, and Xavier was actually a higher seeded team. And then they were down 17 in the Sweet 16 matchup against Michigan State. I'm on the phone with Van Pelt, and he says, "Fuck them." And he says, "I'm turning it off." And I'm like, "All right, go ahead and turn it off." And then I'm calling him like 30 minutes later. "Are you watching this?" He's like, "Shut up, you're lying." They had come back, tied it up, and then they lost with about 3 seconds to go. I want to say it was 62-60. 64-62. To Michigan State.
60-58.
Okay. I didn't get that one exactly right. I wasn't that far off.
You got then, the team, though.
Then in 2004, they won the ACC tournament with John Gilchrist's big run. By the way, in that Sweet 16 loss to Michigan State, Steve Blake in his final game had a three-pointer from about 35 feet that just barely hit off the front rim at the buzzer that would have won the game. The next year, 2004, was the year that they lost to Syracuse, as Syracuse went on to they were the defending champion, actually. In the first round, UTEP? Was it Texas El Paso?
Yes.
All right, good. Close game, right?
86-83.
And then Syracuse, they lost by two. They had a chance to win the game at the end in the second round to go to the Sweet 16.
And for all the money, can you guess the final score?
72-70?
Yes.
Was it?
Yes.
The next year, they did not go to the tournament. They were really good. They beat Duke twice that year, the number one team in America, but they lost Chris McCray to suspension, or they lost him off the team late. That hurt. They would have been back. That was the first year, you know, since Gary's last probation year that they didn't make the tournament. They went to the NIT. They went to the NIT semis in Madison Square Garden that year. I want to say they lost to South Carolina or Iowa. I'm not sure. It was.
I don't have that.
Okay. 2006.
I can get that.
2006
NIT semis.
2006 was another NIT year, and then in 2007. Really good team. DJ Strawberry, Mike Jones had some big wins during the year, beat North Carolina late in the year. They beat Davidson and Steph Curry in the first round, and Curry had 36 or something like that. Steph Curry was just being discovered at that point, because it was the next year that they made their run to the Sweet 16. Davidson did. Maryland beat Davidson and then lost to Butler in the second round by a point, or maybe it was 2 points. They had a chance
three.
To win by three. They had a chance. Okay. Mike Jones had a chance to tie it at the end, didn't. That was a disappointing loss, because I think if Maryland had played Butler that year, 10 times, they would have won 7 or 8 of them. DJ Strawberry was banged up, I think, if I recall. The next year was the beginning of sort of the Vasquez. Well, Vasquez played in the other one, too. They missed the tournament the next year. And then 2009 was when they lost to Memphis in the second round after beating, oh boy.
Uh-oh. This is more recent.
Yeah, I know. 2009, they got to the ACC tournament final, lost to Duke. And I want to say the team they beat had like gold jerseys.
They did.
Was it UT Chattanooga? No.
No.
Okay.
Big school. Bigger school.
Bigger school?
Mm-hmm.
In the first round?
Mm-hmm.
Gold jerseys?
They might not be. I mean, they have gold.
Cal. Yeah. Cal.
Yes.
They beat Cal. God damn. And then they lost to Memphis. They got blown out by Memphis. And then the next year was the most devastating loss maybe in Maryland basketball history. They won the ACC regular season title. They beat in the first round Houston. And then they lost on a buzzer beater by Corey Lucius in Michigan State at the buzzer, 83-81. Is that right? No. 82-80. What was the final score? 85-83. Which one was it?
85-83.
85-83 on the Corey Lucius shot.
All right.
And the shame of that, Cooley, is that the whole draw had opened up. Northern Iowa had upset Kansas. And so Maryland essentially was the highest seeded team in that draw. They would have, had they survived that, you know, last second shot with Draymond Green on the floor, Corey Lucius, Delvon Rowe, the whole group. The guy ducks, it goes right to Lucius, and Lucius knocks down the buzzer beater. That team was good enough with Vasquez, Hayes, Milbourne, Jordan Williams, et cetera, to make a Final Four run, which, you know, could have been Gary's third Final Four. And it just unfortunately ended just so abruptly. They had come back. They had taken the lead. It looked, Vasquez hit the shot to give him the lead. No timeout called. By the way, they're trying, Izzo's over there screaming for a timeout as Lucius catches the ball, but they didn't give him the timeout, and Lucius makes the shot, and that's it. Why did we just do this?
You loved it. It might have been your shining moment of the time we've been together.
I think supermarket trivia would be more fun, though.
Who did they lose to in the first round of the NIT tournament in 2006?
Oh, I was there. Manhattan. Am I right?
You are right.
Yeah. That was the low point. Gary Williams had just an amazing run, right? He takes over a program from Bob Wade, you know, all the trouble that Maryland got into. They essentially got shut down for all intents and purposes for something ridiculous. And then once they started to go to the tournament, they were, you know, they were a top 10, top 15 program for, you know, basically 15, 16, 17 years. And the only time in the postseason that it was just utterly disappointing was that particular year. And the bad part about that year is the ACC tournament, I think it was that year, was played in D.C. at MCI. Or Capital One, or whatever it was called at that point. And they needed to win a couple of games. If they had won a couple of games, they may have gotten a bid. They didn't. And it was just it was the first time. It was the first time that for them, that they really weren't a significant factor on the national scene those 2 years. They went to the NIT back-to-back years. And then they went to the NIT again, actually. That's the thing. I mean, like, all the complaining about Turgeon and from people, and he's only been to one Sweet 16 in 9 years, and it's not good enough. I understand that. I still think he's a good coach, and I'm not going to come off of that. But Gary's last, 2003 was his last Sweet 16. His final year was 2011. So basically, Gary's final 8 years, he didn't go to a Sweet 16. He went to the tournament 4 times in those final 8 years, and they didn't lose in the first round any of those years, but they didn't get to a Sweet 16. They had some disappointing losses. You know, the Michigan State loss was crushing. But anyway, I could actually, if you really wanted it, I could name lefties years too. But those were
That's going to be up to you there, pal.
I don't want to do that. No, that would be totally insufferable for anybody to have to listen to any of this. Hopefully, you sped forward during this. What is an area that I could quiz you on one of these days?
Nothing like that.
Nothing that is an absolute waste of space. Yes, a waste of space.
No sports trivia like that. That was awesome, though.
Well, I mean, you know, that was the height. I mean, Gary is a Hall of Fame coach because he had some great teams. And what's really interesting about his run is how many teams actually – there were so many of his teams, Chris, that you really thought were capable of winning the national championship or getting to the Final Four that didn't. And it's really this will be the last thing, I promise, and then we'll get to Alex Smith and some of the other things. You know, a lot of the complaining about Turgeon is what you heard about Gary before he made his first Final Four and then won the national championship. There was a period there, and, you know, we just went through it, where they were, you know, the Sweet 16 seemed to be the ceiling. Like, they went to, like, four or five Sweet 16s before they won the national championship, but they couldn't break through that ceiling. And the criticism, when they lost to St. John's, Gary was criticized. They were like, that team with Steve Francis, with Obinna Keezy, with Laron Prophet, Yesikavicius, that team should have been in the Final Four. And it really felt like it should have been. It had been ranked basically in the top five all year long. They had been ranked number two, you know, for like 10 weeks of that season. And they were out in the Sweet 16. That was painful. And there was a lot of thought that Gary, you know, had a ceiling as a coach. Good thing that nobody bailed on him. And Turgeon, you know, the argument is different, obviously, because it's not like Mark's taking the team to lots of Sweet 16s every year. But they're winning a lot of games and going to the tournament. This is going to be the sixth year, if they make it, and they should, the sixth out of 7 years they're going to be in the tournament. I'd rather be in the tournament every year than take my chances of not being in the tournament every year.
Well, that's an easy one.
Yeah. Although some people say, let's roll the dice, and maybe when we make the tournament, we can win the national championship. I think
that's that varies in how you recruit and play guys and how you go about moving forward. But with the transfer portal stuff, it's really hard, especially right now. It's a free year in college sports.
I think last year was really unfortunate for Mark. He had his best team. It's not even close. The Diamond Stone, you know, Rashad Suleiman, that team was not as good or cohesive as last year's team. And they didn't get to play the tournament. If they had played the tournament, I think they would have made a deep run. I think they definitely would have been in the second weekend at the very least, which would have put them in a Sweet 16 or an Elite Eight game. And I think they had a chance to really, you know, be among the final few teams standing. And he would have gotten a contract extension and the conversation about him would have been over, at least for a few years anyway. But we know what happened. We didn't get to play the tournament last year. All right, I do want to get to this Alex Smith stuff, which we will do right after this word from one of our sponsors. If you've been thinking about windows, please give Window Nation a chance. I've been endorsing Window Nation for over a decade now. I wouldn't continue to do it if I didn't have complete trust in them. Right now, they are offering up their virtual home show extravaganza sale. First of all, if you go to windownation.com/homeshow, you'll see a lot about their product and this following offer. Get two free windows with every two you buy, no down payment, no payments, and no interest for two full years. You're going to save thousands of dollars. You're going to get brand new windows, and you're going to save big on energy bills. They've installed 200,000 windows in the last year alone, 40 times more than the average window company. 99.5% of them required no follow-up service. They've got over 1 million windows total installed. They've got an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, and they've got over 10,000 online positive reviews. If you know anything about retail, it's hard to get positive reviews. Everybody wants to complain when they don't get it right. Very few want to tell you how great you were when you deliver. Well, they've got over 10,000 online positive reviews. Windows are made here locally as well. They've got a 97% customer customer satisfaction rating, and they're the fifth largest window retailer in the U.S. Again, it worked for me. It'll work for you. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com/homeshow for their virtual home show extravaganza sale. Two free windows for every two you buy. No down payment, no payments, and no interest for two full years. You will save thousands. The quote, by the way, is free. They can do it virtually online or following all CDC guidelines. They'll come into your home and give you a free quote. You don't have to act on it right away. You can think about it. But if you've been thinking about windows, at least give them a chance to give you a free estimate. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com/homeshow. All right, so didn't have a chance on the podcast yesterday to address this Alex Smith situation, and I'm glad we're saving it for today anyway, so Cooley can weigh in as well. I'm assuming that most of you know what I'm talking about. Alex Smith did an interview with GQ magazine with Clay Skipper, and it got into a lot of what he went through with the injury, but then there were certain questions that he answered that created a bit of a stir. The first question that he answered was, you know, why play football again this year? And he goes through the experience that he had had down in San Antonio when he was, doing physical therapy with a lot of the military injured people. And he said, you know, in the back of my head, I never thought it was actually going to happen. I put this crazy thing out there and was like, let's see if we can go get it. Really, a big part of me was skeptical. Like, that's not going to happen anyway. I'm going to hit the wall before I get there. It was really scary when I finally got the clearance right before camp from all the doctors. I got this big round of imaging done, and all the doctors, all the military doctors, all the doctors in D.C. were like, you're good to go. I never thought I'd hear those words. They were like, if you want to play football again, you can do it. And so the next question gets into some of what was discussed a lot the last couple of days. The author that wrote the story says, I assume you were talking to the Washington football team throughout the process. Were they surprised to hear that you were ready to go? They were, Alex Smith said. They never thought I was coming back. No one there. I did all my rehab outside of the building. They do ACLs and stuff like that. But walking in with what I had, it's like you've got three eyes. So what was their response? Alex Smith was asked. And Alex Smith then said the following. So there was a very small group of people that actually thought that I could do this. I think the rest of the world either doubted me or they patronized me. Yeah, that's really nice that you're trying. You know, like, hey, that's really nice that you're trying, pal. Good luck. When I decided to come back, I definitely threw a wrench in the team's plan. They didn't see it, didn't want me there, didn't want me to be a part of it, didn't want me to be on the team, the roster, didn't want to give me a chance. Mind you, it was a whole new regime. They came in. I'm like leftovers, and I'm hurt, and I'm this liability. Heck no, they didn't want me there. At that point, as you can imagine, everything I'd been through, I couldn't have cared less about all that. Whether you like it or not, I'm giving this a go at this point. And then the writer says, so you convinced them? And he said, well, yeah, I mean, they tried to put me on PUP, the physically unable to perform list, for 2 weeks. Then they tried to IR me. I felt like I still hadn't had my fair shake at that point. I wanted to see if I could play quarterback and play football, and I feel like I hadn't been given the opportunity yet to find out. So anyway, those were the comments that he made in this GQ story that got a lot of attention. I mean, it's funny, after I did the radio show yesterday morning and I did a bunch on this, I see everybody, you know, on the national shows, you know, it's done in Washington. Alex Smith rips the team on the way out, you know, et cetera. Or that, you know, and people were taking sides, right? You know, the people that always blame the team for everything are saying, there they go. They, you know, they didn't welcome him back. I mean, here's the guy that, you know, had been injured for 2 years. He's making this miraculous comeback, et cetera. I have very strong feelings about this, but I'll let you go first.
What are they supposed to do?
Yeah.
The guy had as gruesome of an injury as it gets. He almost died. To think that he's going to overcome it in the time frame that he overcame it is insanity. To think that even if he does overcome it, that he's going to be capable of playing for an extended period of time is insanity, which he didn't play for that long, half a season. You know that you got this contract on the books, so you're just, okay, well, we're going to find out because there's really nothing else we can do. Even if he comes back and is 75% of what he was, it's at that point, it still makes him the 28th best starter in the league. It wasn't like you were taking Tom Brady or Peyton Manning and getting 75% of that. You're a new staff. You're trying to completely rebuild. I'm sure they like Alex. Everyone that meets him likes him. He fits in. So I'm sure it's like, okay, well, he's here. We got to pay him. He's on the roster. We like him. Whatever. Let's give it a shot. But do we really believe it? No. Should they be faulted for not believing it? No. It was where they got stuck with it. I didn't think he would really play. I didn't think he would play really well.
Remember the bet we had? You thought there was a chance, actually, but you didn't know the severity of it.
The severity of what?
You didn't – when you bet me
– when we made the bet, I didn't know the severity.
Yeah, that was in 2019.
Now,
yeah.
Now, I was in the facility every single day over the next year and watched him rehab and knew he was getting closer, but also knew that he had drop foot.
Yeah, but you did not know that he nearly died or nearly had his leg amputated.
Yeah, I did.
Well, you never told me that.
Well, at that point, I didn't know that he nearly died. I did know that he nearly had his leg amputated.
You had never told me that. Why did
but
you?
But I just knew that he was. I knew that he was much better at that point.
The bet that we made, for those that don't know, in 2019, not last year, in 2019, early in the season, Cooley and I had a wager. Cooley said that he would be on the 45-man game day roster for a game before the end of the year. And I said he wouldn't be. So I won the bet. But go ahead.
You did win the bet.
In 2019.
All they had to do was activate him for one game.
Well, maybe you should have exerted your influence around there.
Seriously, I should have had some pull with that. I don't care that they didn't believe in him, not even a little bit. Why would you? Nobody that was left over, other than the owner, essentially, had anything to do with acquiring him. It is crazy that he made it back. That's how I feel. And I think everybody is impressed by it, and he should be impressed by it. And if he wants to continue to play, I think he's still a backup quarterback at this point. I don't feel sorry that no one was gung-ho about it. I just don't. I wouldn't have been. If I came in, I would have looked at his film the year before with Jay. I would have said, look, if this guy doesn't have Travis Kelce and Tariq Hill, which we certainly don't, he's a check down 175 to 225 yards a game, complete 64%. Because that's what I think he is. And without his mobility, what am I getting out of it?
Right.
Nothing. And that's what I would have thought. Now, the one thing that I told you and that I believe in and I loved is with a new head coach, first time new offensive coordinator, also first time offensive coordinator, they needed a pro to install their offense for them. They needed a guy to get that offense and team better, to show them how to operate. And Alex can at least do that. And he did do that. And they did get better on offense. And a lot of credit should go to Alex for a lot of the rest of the offense, understanding what Scott Turner was trying to accomplish.
Right.
He did a great job this year in doing just, if it was just that. And he did more. He had a couple big time games. So look, I don't feel sorry for the fact that he wasn't pushed in there and said, you're the best. And that shit doesn't happen, man.
Yes. Yeah, so
I don't know. And I do appreciate his intelligence to know they didn't want him back. It doesn't, I mean, I knew the day that they didn't want me to play there. That day I knew. The day that I went on the field and like, hey, let's let Niles Paul take this route. I was like, well, that's weird, because that's been mine since I've been here. Well, yeah, let's see what Logan can do. Okay. Uh-huh. Let's see what he can do. How about let's see what I can do. And I was, that hurt my feelings, man. That sucked. It hurt my ego. And I'm sure it hurt Alex's ego as well. But that was the situation they were put in. It was fine.
So the first thing that I would say is that when you read things like this in print, sometimes they're not truly reflective of the tone. Like, the tone would have made you think differently. Like, I think there's a chance that he was essentially just saying it was so improbable, it was so crazy, and he was just trying to use the fact that they felt that way about him to hammer home that point. I mean, look, one of the things he says, you know, when the military doctors and all my doctors in D.C. were like, you're good to go, I never thought I'd hear those words. Well, nor did they, to your point.
No one did.
But my sense of it is that I don't think personally that this interview was Alex Smith, you know, taking shots at the team.
I don't either.
Okay. Well, a lot of people did, and that's fine. And by the way, I don't know that it wasn't. That's just my guess. I don't think he was trying to come off as hostile, you know, or antagonistic. That's what it appeared maybe in print. I don't think that that was probably the tone. With that said, to your point, the team was 100% justified, and it was totally rational to plan as if he was never going to play again. Nobody, including him, thought he would. The team certainly didn't think he would. And for the team to, by the way, hope that he never did isn't a terrible thought either. You can root for this guy, but remember this, they don't want to be put into a position to play a guy that's, you know, 60% of his former self, especially when, you know, they're paying him what they're paying him, and there would have been a huge cap savings had he retired, or had he, you know, there was an insurance policy on a catastrophic career-ending injury too. But there was no reason for them to plan on him playing again. And when it became actually within the realm of possibility that he might be able to play, and this is what I said to you and to Tommy on this podcast, you know, over the summer and even into the early portion of the season, when they decided not to pup him, not to IR him, and he was on the roster, and I said, this team, unlike any other team, more than any other team in the league, this team should not be the team that puts him out on the field. They shouldn't be. There's too much at risk for this team to put him on the field and have it go poorly. Because if it happened in Jacksonville, or if it happened somewhere where the initial injury didn't happen, or if there wasn't recent history of, you know, major issues with trainers, with medical, with the whole Trent Williams situation, this team, more than any other, given their recent history, should have been very concerned and very hesitant to put him back out there. And, you know, JP had this thing that I read last night, that he talked to team officials, and one person said, on the condition, I guess, of anonymity, look, when we finally did put him out there, we were so sweating it. Do you know what would have happened to us had he gotten hurt again? Yes! So, A, there was no reason for them to think that he would ever play again, so they should have planned accordingly. B, they should have been hesitant to put him back out there. They had more risk than the other 31 teams combined almost. But they did put him back out there. They did give him a chance. And they gave him a chance for a lot of reasons. He proved that, you know, in practice that, you know, he looked good. They wanted to get Dwayne as far away from the field as possible. So when they benched him, they made him third stringer, remember, and inactive, and elevated Alex to backup, which put him one snap away. As we discussed here the day after the Rams game, I would never have put him back out on the field after watching him in that Rams game. I thought they had gotten super lucky to have survived that half. It was one of the worst quarterbacked halves I have ever seen as a football fan for 50 years. One of the worst I have ever seen. He threw for 37 yards, got sacked 6 times, and did not have one first down. They punted on every drive except for a fourth down that they went for. He was terrible. We know the Aaron Donald first sack jumping on his back, and he got up, and we're like, oh, thank God. But he was tossed around like a rag doll in that game. And you know, the funny thing about that game, remember what Ron Rivera said? Ron Rivera said, yeah, Kyle could have played, but we didn't feel – we thought it was risky to put Kyle back in there. And I'm like, risky to put Kyle? Like,
it was safer to play Alex.
It was safer to play Alex. He was so fortunate to survive that half. But then I give Ron Rivera credit. He came to Alex's credit, and he said, look, that was a rough half. But we've seen him in practice, and he's played and looked much different than we saw in that game. That was a rust half. We weren't very good around him. And he kept him in that backup role when Kyle Allen came back and quarterbacked the win over the loss to the Giants and then the win over the Cowboys. And then, you know, he got hurt in that Giants game, and Alex came in. And Alex did play well at times the rest of the year. It worked out. Fortunately, it worked out for him. You know, he got to play. He won Comeback Player of the Year. He won, you know, five games as a starter as part of a 5-2 closing stretch where the team, you know, made it into the postseason. It worked out for him. It worked out for the team. But the team took the risk. And the only thing missing from that story, and maybe it was edited out, it could have been, it would have been nice for Alex to be a little bit grateful for the opportunity. Because if you're really eyes wide open on this, and I think he's smart enough to realize this, he was here for the whole Trent Williams thing. He knew what was going on. This organization took a huge risk putting him back on the field. They didn't owe it to him. They didn't have to do it. They did it in part because they thought, you know, in the moment he was their best option. It's not like they had a lot of good options. And it worked out. But for me, Cooley, it's now time to wish him the best and move on. Thanks, Alex. We don't take anything you said in that GQ or article personally at all. We love you. We're supportive of you. We're so glad that everything happened the way it happened, and we're so, so pleased with how you played for us. Hopefully you feel the same way about us, but we can't bring you back at $24.4 million in a cap number, and we're just going to move on with something, you know, that we think is more stable for us. It's time for them to move on from Alex Smith. Not just because of this,
yes,
but it's just time.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's time. We're good. It's time to go in another direction. And just in as much – look, it's just really hard to say he's going to be better than the 25 other quarterbacks. Is he going to be better than 25 other quarterbacks? I don't think so, man.
No chance.
Like, there's a new thing on the NFL Network, the quarterback index, ranking the 59 starting quarterbacks of the 2020 NFL season.
The 59 starters backups, you mean?
59 guys
that played. Oh, 59 guys that played.
In the NFL season. And Alex Smith came in at 27. Mm-hmm. Below Andy Dalton, Taysom Hill, Jalen Hurts, Jared Goff, Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's where he is, though.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to give him the reins of a team that had three big-time weapons, things might be completely different.
No, they wouldn't.
He might. Sorry. Let me rephrase that. He might be the 23rd best quarterback. 21st best quarterback.
He's not a starter
but
anymore.
You're not winning Super Bowls if you don't have a top 15 quarterback.
You weren't winning Super Bowls with him to begin with in 2018 before the injury. That's why Andy Reid moved on.
I know.
He's
so move on.
Move on. And you know, I had several people say to me, you know, you went overboard in saying that he should be grateful. I don't think so. Again, I explained why. This organization took a big risk. You cannot undersell the risk that this team took. It would have been much different with another team. If he were playing for the Cleveland Browns backing up Baker Mayfield and he had come in and gotten hurt in Cleveland, it wouldn't have been the same. If he had gotten hurt here, the distrust that so many people had in this organization's ability to protect its own players.
Well, they would have been, I think, to that point, I understand what you're saying, is the PR look of it, the imagery of it would have...
The business of it, Cooley. The business
of
it.
Those things would have ended up being part of the business of it, but they would have had no actual financial or legal obligation towards Alex Smith.
No, I understand. I didn't say that.
I mean, he was cleared.
Yeah, I did not say that. I meant that if this team, let's just say that the Rams' second half didn't go well, which it didn't, but let's say it ended poorly with him being injured seriously again. Can you imagine?
Yeah, it would have looked bad.
Oh.
Yes.
It would have looked terrible. So, and by the way, they knew that. They knew that. Look, bottom line is it worked out. You know, they got a little bit lucky. He got a little bit lucky. They won some games. They were in a terrible division and played in the playoff game. But, you know, he got hurt again, and he's going to continue. He's probably never going to be totally healthy. There's no place he's going to get. I had Jeremy Fowler on this morning from ESPN. He's really good, and he's definitely dialed into this team. And he said, first of all, there is a meeting scheduled next week between Alex's people and maybe even Alex and the Washington people, and they're going to figure out what's next. He sort of indicated his gut is that they come to a conclusion that it's time to move on from one another. Part of it is he's like, this quarterback stuff that's going on, they don't have the solutions in place yet, but he sort of feels like this will be a meeting to say, we wish you the best of luck, we're going to release you. So personally, I hope that's what happens. I then said to him, where's he going to go? Like, obviously Urban Meyer in Jacksonville makes a lot of sense, or any team with a quarterback that, you want to back up and you want some real maturity and you want a real veteran presence and you want even a mentor for a younger guy. Okay. But is there any place in the league that you think would sign him to start?
No.
Me neither.
Best case, sign him to compete.
Where? I mean, New England?
Sure, New England could end up starting him.
I mean, that was the one team I thought of. But they're going to try to address quarterback here.
I mean,
Alex Smith isn't on the quarterback
carousel.
He could end
up having a chance to play in Denver. He could end up having a chance to play in New York. He could have a chance to play New England. I mean, chance in Chicago.
Okay. I
guess Chicago wouldn't be that unrealistic because he knows Nagy and they have nobody.
That's true, but they're trying to get somebody. They're not
trying to get Alex Smith. Like right now, as of right now, he ain't going anywhere as a starter.
Okay, so if Nagy ends up with Marcus Mariota and they get to July, and he hasn't solved it with anything other than Mariota, maybe he says, Alex, come here, and you can compete with Marcus. And if you're ready and you're physically capable and you win the job, you'll be the quarterback next year. I could see something like that.
You see, the Mariota trade thing is almost dead now.
Well, that's not what Jeremy Fowler said to me this morning. He said that he thinks, first of all, he was of the belief that Stafford and Wentz is not the beginning of what's going to be wild, wild movement, quarterback carousel movement. He said he believes the next one that'll drop will be Mariota. He said, of course, the contract may make it so that the Raiders need to release him. However, if there's more than one team interested, you're going to potentially trade something for him just so that you're guaranteed to have him rather than having him waived and then you don't know if you'll get him or not. That may have been the situation, by the way, that Jay Gruden was trying to explain to me about the Kansas City situation a few years ago. He thought that they could have waited for Kansas City to waive him. Cleveland was interested in Alex Smith. So ultimately, we're going to have to trade something. But he took a shot at Bruce and Dan for overpaying for Alex Smith. But anyway, on Mariota, he thinks that's the next one to drop, and he does think that Washington's one of the teams in the mix. And he thinks it's a fourth or fifth rounder. It's somewhere around a fourth rounder for Mariota.
Yeah, well, it's a fourth rounder, and you got to pay him $10 million for the first year, and then you have the chance to negotiate with him. Depends on how the year goes.
If he starts and plays, it turns out to be, like we said before, approaching $20 million for a year. But again, if he wins that job, starts and plays for them, and he's good enough, and he starts, you know, enough games to earn $20 million, that means he must have been the best option for them.
Yeah, well, the best option doesn't make him worth $20 million, and that's the question that you're going to run into.
All right, the next question is this. Sam Darnold. Jeremy Fowler did tell me something about Sam Darnold. And then I also had Matt Bowen on the show this morning.
I like Matt.
I know you do, and I do too. And he had a lot to say about a couple of players that I don't think we've given enough thought to that could end up here. We'll do that next, right after this word from one of our sponsors. March Madness is approaching. I want you to think about MyBookie for all of your sports betting needs. MyBookie is located at MyBookie.ag, and if you use my promo code KevinDC, they will match your deposit halfway up to $1,000. So if you deposit $1,000, they'll give you an extra $500 to play with. Deposit $500, they'll give you an extra $250 to play with. Even if you have a spot where you're currently betting on sports, get a second spot. You'll get the free money to wager with, and you'll have a place to comparison shop when it comes to point spreads, money lines, pricing, etc. MyBookie is one of those places you can be assured of getting paid if you win. You're going to get quality lines, fair pricing. It's a place that is reputable, and I stake my betting reputation on it. I've used MyBookie. I'm a customer of MyBookie. I've got other places too, but I use MyBookie, and they have terrific lines, terrific pricing, and it will be a place that if you are into sports betting and tread lightly, you will be fine at. MyBookie, MyBookie.ag. Use my promo code KevinDC. All right, so first of all, Houston reiterated yesterday and even today, they're not trading Deshaun Watson. And I talked to Fowler about that, and Fowler seems to believe also that he probably won't get dealt this year. Anyway, I asked him about Sam Darnold, and he said there's definitely going to be a lot of interest in Sam Darnold, and he believes that Washington will be one of the teams that will be interested. And he said, you know, I mentioned that he said that there's going to be a meeting next week between Alex's people and Washington's people to figure out his future here. He also said, after talking to several NFL executives, it is their belief, based on Washington's activity, whether it was Stafford or sniffing around in other situations, that Washington's starting quarterback in 2021 is not currently on their roster. And I think that that's a fair conclusion. Stafford, you know, the reports of maybe some interest in Carr and Goff and Mariota, and now maybe even in Darnold, they're looking to upgrade. You know, Matt Bowen said to me this morning, he said, I view Taylor Heinicke and Kyle Allen as strong number twos. And he said, I'd be surprised if they don't view them the same way. Now, if you had to play them, you know, with a good team around them, okay, you can compete because they did last year. But are you gonna, you know, are you gonna win a Super Bowl? Are you gonna go deep into the postseason with either one of them? No, they're strong number twos. He brought up the following name. He said, I think Andy Dalton would be a great fit for Scott Turner's offense. And I said, give me a prediction. Who's their starting quarterback? He goes, it's a wild prediction. He said, but I have a feeling Prescott definitely ends up in Dallas, and a guy like Dalton becomes very interesting to Scott Turner and Ron Rivera. I started thinking about this, Cooley. I think Dalton would be a good fit. Do you?
Yes and no. I don't think he'd be a terrible fit. I don't think he'd be a massive upgrade. I'm not overly impressed with Dalton. It's funny, though, when he left Cincinnati a year ago, right now we would have been considering Dalton after he was the starter in Cincinnati.
Definitely.
He went to Dallas and was a backup, and now we're done with that. I mean, he looked terrible in a couple games, especially against Washington early when he was hurt. He wasn't as terrible.
He came on late. He had a good finish to the season after, you know, he recovered from the hit. In
another nice thing about Dalton is it's not going to cost you a fortune. Like, what did Dallas have to pay Andy Dalton?
I don't know. I'll look it up. I forget. But what about – okay. By the way, I think you're right. I think Andy Dalton, Cincinnati, we'd feel differently. But
he signed a one-year, $3 million contract.
Yeah.
Seriously, that's all anyone thought of Andy Dalton.
I know.
That's
Is Dalton at his best? Is he a good fit for Scott Turner's offense?
Yeah, but is he a great fit? No. I like it though, Kev. If it's just a fill the gap year, I think it's probably got more longevity than Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right, because he's 33, not 38.
So it could be a let's find out if Dalton could be the guy year to some extent.
Right. Yeah. Is he an upgrade over Heinicke and Allen? I think he is. It sounds like you don't, though.
I'm not saying I don't. Yes, he's like right now, based on the history of the quarterbacks that we're talking about, yes, he would be absolutely an upgrade. How big of an upgrade is a question, but if you pay Andy Dalton $3 million a year, then you can find out in training camp if he's an upgrade.
Right.
I mean, that's,
yeah, you don't have to start him.
There's nothing you have to do to keep Dalton or worry about Dalton as a starter at $3 million a year. You pay Fitzpatrick $8 million a year, he's got to be your starter.
Okay, so which would you choose, Dalton or Fitzpatrick? Dalton, let's just say Dalton, that there's some, let's just say there's more of a market this year for him. I'm not saying that there is, but there might be. And let's say you got to pay him $4 million and you got to pay Fitzpatrick $8. Which of the two options would you choose?
I hate both these options.
I don't. I like Fitzpatrick first and Dalton second.
I don't. Yeah, like, obviously.
I would do Fitzpatrick, even if it's only for a year or two, at $8 million plus with incentives, before I would do Dalton. But I would do Dalton before Cam Newton. I would do Dalton before Tyrod Taylor. I think I would do Dalton before Jacoby Brissett. And I'm talking about like the free agent guys, the low to mid-priced free agent options out there. I would do Andy Dalton before Mitch Trubisky. Of course.
You would do Dalton before you would do Fitzpatrick? Did you say that?
No, I would do Fitzpatrick before Dalton.
Okay, good.
Yeah, even at twice the money. And even though it would be for a year or two.
I would do Fitzpatrick before I would do Dalton.
Me too.
At quarterback, and you have plenty of cap room, you're not worried about $4 or $8 million. You shouldn't be.
No, not with their cap situation. Not at all. And you're not making any sort of long-term commitment to either one of them. I mean, what's Dalton really going to get? He got 1 year, $3 million. Well, you know, it might be the Colt McCoy 2 year, $4 million, 2 years, $6 million, or whatever it was.
Yeah, he might not be getting three.
Yeah.
Because even when you played well, you're like, dude, you had Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup.
I know, but they also had a terrible defense.
But that doesn't mean
it was complimentary football there. I went back and looked at the games, and we see a lot of the Cowboy games. The Cowboys sucked last year because they were terrible on defense. And even though they had some speed up front, when they lost Dak, obviously they were in big trouble. Dalton comes in, and he isn't good initially. All right. Although he did lead that drive to beat the Giants the day that Prescott got hurt, and he was 9 for 11 in the fourth quarter in that game for 111 yards, including the game winning drive. When he got hurt and then sat out a few weeks, he came back. He played very well in an upset win over Minnesota. The Thanksgiving Day game was not good for him. The Baltimore game was actually not nearly as bad as the final score indicated. They missed, they missed a field goal or two in that game when it was still tight. And then they beat Cincinnati, San Francisco, and Philadelphia, and he was good, you know, down the stretch, losing to the Giants in that final game when they had to win to have a chance if Washington lost to Philadelphia. But over his final, when he got back after being injured, he started 7 games. In those 7 games, they were 4-3, and he threw, I think it was 13 touchdowns, 4 picks, and was decent. I was a Dalton fan. I remember you and I were doing the show together, you know, during the Kirk days, and I was like, I'll take Dalton. Can we get Dalton for, you know, a second round pick or a second and a fourth? I'll take Dalton. You know,
I think Jay always liked Dalton.
He did. I asked him about Dalton. He also he loved Dalton. You know, he's 33. It's funny the way you said that, because I think if we didn't have last year's vision in our minds, that it would be a much more attractive deal. Like if he was just coming, if he was just leaving Cincinnati, it would be different. But we do have last year.
Well, it wasn't that different for him.
What do you mean?
He didn't get paid.
I know. True.
So, we might have thought it was somewhat different, but it wasn't.
Fair point. But I'm just talking in terms of how we would think of him if he was in Cincinnati this year and they're drafting Joe Burrow this year and they're moving on and he's available as a free agent. Regardless of what the market for him would be.
And you said $3 million for 1 year. Let's find out what we get out of the Red Rocket.
We jump
Everyone
it.
Was it.
Yeah,
sure.
Red Rifle.
Red Rocket.
yeah.
I think everyone knows what that is.
Yeah. I'm bringing up these names because it's very possible that as you think about all of these players, that Winston remains in New Orleans, Prescott remains in Dallas, Watson doesn't get traded. You know, Jeremy Fowler told me this morning that there's now some talk that the new coaching staff in New York, they really do like a lot of what they've seen in Darnold, and that maybe they won't trade Darnold. If they do, like to his point, he's like, there's going to be a market for Darnold. You know, it's funny, and I mentioned this morning on the radio show. I remember people saying, why do you want Stafford? He's got a losing record. And I'm like, because I really like Stafford. I've liked him for years.
And
because
he's good. Really good.
And then the league spoke to what Stafford was, much more than I could or you could or any of our listeners could. You know, there were 12 teams that
But we weren't surprised because you asked me what I would give up for Stafford. And you kept telling me you were going to have to give up a first rounder. I'm like, you're going to have to give up two.
Yeah, you were the first one that said
two.
Yeah, no, but I mean, the league spoke. Like a third of the teams expressed interest. Four or five teams basically made offers. And I'm not so sure that if Darnold were made available, the league wouldn't speak to Darnold too. They're not looking at results in his situation in New York. They're looking at the player. They're also probably looking at how they had him evaluated coming out of Southern Cal. And I know that the discussion is a second and a mid-round pick, which, by the way, if there's more than one team, and I bet there would be.
It'll be more.
It'll end up being a late first, maybe, or next year. It could be like a third. It could be the Wentz deal. It could be a third this year and a conditional first or second from next year, depending on how many snaps he gets.
It'll be a little less than the Wentz deal is what I would bet you.
That's what Fowler said. It's going to be less than the Wentz deal. He thought so.
But I wouldn't, if there's a couple teams interested, which if you get it done before the draft stuff, there certainly is, it'll be a little less than Wentz, because Wentz has had he's played some really good football where Darnold hasn't. I mean, Darnold's played, we've talked about it. We know Darnold's played all right.
Yeah, he's had some good games against good
teams. Wentz has played some really good football.
Right.
Like almost MVP level football.
Well, there's
a couple years ago.
You also had, you know, the Frank Reich situation. Darnold doesn't have a Frank Reich out there. You know, a coach of a team that believes in him, and that team is a quarterback away from potentially winning a Super Bowl or certainly competing for one. Darnold doesn't have that
right in
the league. I bring up these lower to mid-tier free agent guys because ultimately the big names may just not be available. So if they are going to, you know, end up adding somebody else and it's not just a day three draft choice, you know, you're talking about the people I mentioned. You're talking about Fitzpatrick and Dalton and Cam Newton and Mitch Trubisky and Jacoby Brissett and Tyrod Taylor and Andy Dalton. You know, that's what you're talking about. By the way, I'm an absolute no on Cam Newton. An absolute no on Cam Newton. And I don't think there's any chance in hell he's a possibility. If he were a possibility, I think he would have been a possibility last year.
Mm-hmm.
I did like Jacoby Brissett a lot coming out of NC State. But after that year in Indy, you got to wonder, like, he was with Reich. You know, he was a good situation. And what did they do? They went out and said, you know, 75-year-old Philip Rivers gives us a better chance. And now, you know, Wentz
does. Don't do that. You love Philip Rivers.
I love Philip Rivers. But I'm just saying, Brissett got a year. You know, he got that opportunity to prove it to that staff, right? And he did.
Absolutely. And he didn't.
You know, Tyrod Taylor, I mean, just to me, he's just become sort of a journeyman. And I've watched Tyrod Taylor play in some games where I'm like, hey, you know what? I kind of like him.
I don't.
But you don't. But Dalton, to me, and Fitzpatrick, of all of those guys, the lower to mid-tier free agents, you don't have to give up draft capital. You don't have to give up player capital. It's just, you know, low to mid-level money. You know, Dalton and Fitzpatrick would be among that list, you know, including Mariota. I think I'd want Dalton and or Fitzpatrick even before Mariota. Because you got, and you're going to have to trade for Mariota, more likely than not.
Yeah, I not much.
No.
Is what it really looks like.
His contract will be a lot bigger than Dalton's, though.
Yep, that's the thing with Mariota is you got to eat that deal.
Yeah. What else you got?
And you're saying $20 million if he plays in a bunch of games, and what's his performance going to be? You know, is it going to be worth $20 million for the year?
Right. He'd have to play
in a new offense and in a new offensive system.
Oh, one other guy, Teddy Bridgewater. First of all, you know, he's got years left on his contract. Secondly, there was a story that I found earlier this morning that the reason Carolina is so willing to move on from him after 1 year is that the discussion is that he's just not physically right and hasn't been since coming back.
Mm-hmm.
That there's just not, there's a physical limitation with him. And with Teddy Bridgewater, you need him to be physically fit and do.
Well,
you
he
know,
was never like a move around guy.
Well, he was an extend guy though. He could extend.
God, yeah, but he was never the really super mobile dude.
Nope.
I was never a huge Bridgewater fan.
I liked him. I always liked him.
I don't dislike him.
The guy that I would really love, but
Darnold.
You know, I like Darnold, but Winston.
That's who Bridgewater reminds me of.
Winston,
to some extent,
would
or
be
not Darnold. Sorry, go ahead.
Darnold reminds me a little bit of Stafford.
Bridgewater. He reminds me of somebody we were just talking about, and I lost my train of thought completely.
Darnold reminds you of somebody that we were just talking about?
No, Bridgewater reminds me of somebody.
Oh.
Completely spaced out.
Yeah.
Oh, he reminds me of Dalton a little bit. That's that kind of play.
You know what I don't want?
What you're getting out of Bridgewater.
I don't want a guy that's physically limited anymore. Which we just went through that. Like, let's have a guy that's fully put together. Physically, no matter
draft
what,
Mac Jones?
No matter what his age is, what
would you draft Mac Jones?
Kuiper just came out with his new mock draft. He's got Mac Jones going 8th to Carolina
because he's physically limited.
Yeah,
slow.
But not because of injury.
So, yeah, no, I understand. 8th, huh?
Mm-hmm. He's got every single one of the quarterbacks going in the top 9. Here's Kuiper's new update. Lawrence won to Jacksonville. In the 2 spot, the Jets trade and Atlanta moves up and takes Zach Wilson, and the Jets keep Sam Darnold. The 3rd pick's Devontae Smith. The 4th is Kyle Pitts, the tight end. He goes to the Jets, by the way. So the Jets keep Sam Darnold. They add Kyle Pitts in that swap with
Take Pitts at 4?
Yeah, they take Pitts at 4. Sewell the tackle to Cincinnati at 5. Jamar Chase to the Eagles at 6. And then the 49ers trade up to 7 with Detroit, and they take Justin Fields. The Panthers take Mac Jones. And then the Patriots trade up with Denver to the 9 spot to take Trey Lance. So
the 49ers aren't taking Justin Fields.
Who isn't?
The 49ers aren't going to take Justin Fields.
And those are all the quarterbacks. He's got all of them going before number 9 overall. I wonder if that's ever happened. 5 quarterbacks in the top 9 picks.
I'll tell you what, though. if five quarterbacks go in the top nine, whoever's sitting at 10, 11, and 12 are going to get some dudes, man.
Yeah.
If like if you don't need a quarterback and you're sitting at 10, you like draft them all.
That's Dallas. And then Giants are at 11. You know, so you get five quarterbacks that go in the top nine. You know, you're going to have guys like Surtain, who he's got going to the Cowboys at 10, Jalen Waddle from Alabama going to the Giants at 11, Parsons, the linebacker from Penn State, going to Detroit.
And okay, then, I mean, if Parsons goes at – Parsons not going at 12.
There's some issues maybe around him. If you do some reading about him, there's going to have to be some real vetting on Parsons. By the way, they've got Kuiper's got Christian Darrisaw, the tackle from Virginia Tech, going to Washington at 19. Them getting their tackle.
Gotcha.
So, by the way, you know what I'm noticing and looking at this? There just are very few defensive players. Like quarterback, wide receiver, tight end, tackle, wide receiver, quarterback. Quarterback, and then the first defensive player is Patrick Surtain, who goes to Dallas at 10. Then it's wide receiver, then it's Parsons, then it's tackle, corner to Denver, corner to Arizona. Where's the pass rusher in this draft? When have you ever gone? I mean, Parsons can do it all, by the way. When have you ever gone, I'm 20 picks into this draft right now, I don't see a pass rusher yet? Rousseau.
On Casserly's mock, he has him taking Kwity Paye from Michigan, yeah, who's a pass rusher at 12, San Francisco at 12.
Yeah.
And then Jalen Phillips out of Miami, he has going at 14. So those are two pass rushers. And then Gregory Rousseau from Miami again,
yeah,
at 18.
So yeah, Rousseau opted out. He had a great 2019. He opted out COVID concerns. And he really is a talent. And a lot of people like him a lot. And Kuiper's got him going 21 to the Colts. But he's young and he opted out. But he was dominant in 2019. And then Phillips is the guy that essentially stepped in and you know, played well for him in this season. Okay. What else you got?
All right. Nothing, buddy.
I don't have anything either. The Tiger Woods thing was just, I didn't talk about it yesterday. It was a weird day. It was one of those days. I'm just so happy that he survived that crash. I was reading the, you know, all of the injury information. There's been so many of these, you know, doctors and orthopedics that have sort of weighed in based on the information that's out there. And, you know, there's a lot of what Alex Smith suffered in one leg. He has a lot of the infection risk right now. You know, that's really where the risk is for him,
yeah,
of the next couple of weeks, because there were two open, fractures, two of them. So
was he wearing a seatbelt?
Yes, he was.
What happened? I didn't read enough. Do you want to explain to me what happened?
It was no alcohol, not impaired. It was one of those. So we'll finish up with this, actually, because I don't know if you feel the same way, if you have an answer to this, but there was for me a road and an intersection that was very dangerous growing up. There were fatalities there. There were always accidents there. I'll get to that in a moment. But apparently where he lost control and crossed over the median and then the SUV flipped multiple times, hitting a tree and coming to a rest in, you know, a bunch of brush on the other side of the road. Fortunately, there were no cars coming up that side. But this was, according to everybody, this is one of those places where there are always accidents. It's just a very dangerous downhill, swervy, and, you know, they talked about it, that there have been fatalities here. This is one of those spots that has had, over the years, many, many accidents. So he lost control. I mean, the car does have one of those black boxes that I guess now exists in cars. I actually didn't
really?
I didn't even know that.
I didn't know that.
And so they're going to be able to, you know,
They'll know if he was on his phone or...
Yeah, on his phone, or they'll certainly know rate of speed. By the way, the fire department rescue guy, you know, had his cam on, his body cam on. Everybody's waiting, you know, for the moment that TMZ gets that. So you see what it was like right after the accident with Tiger and his conversation with Tiger. Anyway, so it was just, it was one of these dangerous sort of areas. He probably was doing, you know, above the speed limit, lost control. And it was just, you know, lucky that it wasn't life-ending, because apparently there have been many fatalities in this spot. There was an intersection for me growing up, Cooley, and it still is to this day. River Road in Bethesda and Wilson Lane, the intersection of Wilson Lane and River Road in Bethesda. For those of you familiar, you know where it is. If you're not, if you get off the Beltway at River Road and head south towards D.C. rather than, you know, north towards Potomac, you're a couple of lights away from Wilson Lane and River Road. And that intersection, Cooley, there have been multiple tragic, you know, fatal accidents at that intersection, including one that was very, you know, well known for people that were in high school when I was in high school, because that's right near my high school. Ben Quinn was an all Met wrestler, all Met football player, headed to Virginia Tech, and he was killed at that intersection. I wasn't in high school yet; I was younger, but you know, everybody knew the story of Ben Quinn and that accident. And then in recent years, I can't tell you how many times there have been like flowers left because there was another fatality. I always wonder, like, can't they fix this? Can't they put in another light before the intersection, or lower the speed limit, or fix the road, or whatever? Mm-hmm. But did you have a road like that or an intersection like that growing up?
No, not that I can think of.
Okay.
There's always, I mean, it's just everywhere out here in the wintertime could be a disaster.
I asked that question. I had a bunch of people send in answers to me on Twitter. Muncaster Mill Road, and there's a couple of them in PG County. You know, just areas.
Well, if you're in Leesburg, Dry Mill Road's, it doesn't have a lot of accidents, but it's tiny and people go fast, and they almost, it's like they're using it to bypass Route 7 a lot of times.
Yeah.
And then there's a million people riding their bicycles on it, and you're like swerving around bike. I don't know how there haven't been more disastrous crashes on that road, but there hasn't.
Yeah,
I can think of.
Well, I'm glad. Thank God he's alive. You know, I hope he plays golf again. I'm not one of these people, you know, that are like, can't talk about his future. I mean, that's terrible. I mean, it's just,
why?
Thank God. Yeah, why can't we?
I want to know what his future is going to be.
Of course.
I'm sure the first thing he thinks of is, can I play golf again?
Well, I mean, I hope it's after, you know, he's thrilled to be alive, to be a father and be with his kids and, you know.
Right. But it's definitely going to be up there on his concern list.
I just thought it was very funny in that afternoon. Like, there was a hashtag going around, hashtag don't speculate. Okay, well, I don't want my media people speculating if they don't know. But what's wrong with us speculating? I mean, what does that even mean?
I feel no shame in speculating.
Terrible to even think about him in his golf career right now. Let's hope he's alive. Well, of course. Can't we be both? Can't we actually really hope that he's alive and then, you know, think about, God, if he does survive this and he's got serious injuries, will he ever play golf? I mean, who doesn't with
Everyone
somebody
thinks
like
about that?
Yeah. I just think it's funny the way people react sometimes. It's like, get over yourself. Like, it's okay to
do the right thing all the time, or else.
Well, the bottom line is, an emotional reaction, there's rarely a true right or wrong. Like, you know, you're in an emotional response, and how you respond is how you're responding. Like, I think it's hard to be super critical in that moment, unless, you know, you have significant responsibility in that moment, which, you know, we didn't. I will say this, it was an eerie couple of hours there when you didn't know. It felt a lot like the Kobe Bryant day. Now, the Kobe Bryant day, it started with TMZ reporting that he had died in a helicopter crash. You know, with Tiger Woods, he was in a very serious car accident. And then, you know, you waited until you, you know, finally got the word that they were non-life-threatening injuries, and thank God for that. Okay, we're done for the day. Cooley's done for the week. Tommy will be back with me tomorrow. We'll talk to Cooley on Monday. And who knows? Maybe there will be a new quarterback, or maybe there will be other resolutions. It sounds like the resolution with Alex Smith is coming next week. All right. Have a good one, Cooley.
Goodbye, Kevin. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Chris.